You're listening to Her Side Hustle, the podcast whose mission is to educate and empower the females out there who are hustling to turn their dreams into a reality. I'm your host, Rachel Burke, a 20-something-year-old on a journey to start a movement. I believe females are absolutely capable of creating wildly profitable and purpose-driven businesses. Join me each Tuesday as we sit down with successful female hustlers and hear all about their journey to becoming a female founder. All you need is a little bit of hustle and a whole lot of heart. Let's hear about her side hustle. Today we're chatting with Danielle Desir. And Danielle's an author, a podcaster, a freelance writer, a speaker. The list will honestly go on and on if I keep talking about it all. She's really built kind of like an empire over the past 7 years. And they're all of her businesses are centered around her passion for traveling and finance. She's actually traveled to 27 countries and 4 continents with a full-time job. And she's really, really passionate about empowering financially savvy travelers to make informed financial decisions. I absolutely love traveling. And I think the lifestyle that you are living will really resonate with so many listeners. So I'm very excited and honored to have you here today. Welcome, Danielle.
Thank you. Super excited to chat.
Me too. So your resume is honestly pretty impressive. Like I mentioned, you know, you've really established a lot of different revenue streams and really diversified your business, which is absolutely the way to do it. And I really want to talk to you today about, you know, your journey, the progress that you made and growing this business to where it is today. And I'm sure every person listening would be thrilled to, you know, do everything you're doing, host a podcast, have their own blog, write for others, you know, do all of this. But I think it's really important to recognize that it's not a sprint. It's really not possible to create all of these revenue streams overnight. And it's really just, you know, it's a long, long journey. And you really have to start small, nail one thing down at a time. And once you've succeeded with that one thing, you know, you can really start thinking about other ways to grow your brand. So that's really what I want to talk to you about today, just how you started with that one, you know, avenue, and then how 7 years later, you've got this, like I said, this empire. So I'm excited to learn more about that. But before we dive into the business side of this, I want to just take a second to learn more about Danielle. Like, tell us about your education. What were you doing before you started your own business? And where did the passion for travel and finance and becoming an entrepreneur really begin?
Yes. Well, oh my gosh, there's so much to unpack there. But I would say my love for travel, it's kind of a windy road because my family is from Haiti. And when I was really young, I would think like maybe 3 or 4, I started going to Haiti every summer to spend time with my grandparents. So that was my form of travel, really just going back home. But when I was in Haiti, that's where I learned how to speak the language. My mom tells me I would come back from summer vacation and I wouldn't even know how to speak English anymore. That's how funny. Like, I just think it's so funny. And my mom also tells me that my first language was actually French, even though I can't speak it today, which is interesting.
I was going to say, okay, how did that come about?
Because I think my mom was really intentional about speaking French. So in Haitian households, it's not uncommon to speak French and Creole because those are the two languages. But when I had a babysitter, like after my mom, you know, was raising me, I went to the babysitter and the babysitter would only speak Creole. And then that's kind of where I lost the French part. So long story short, a little tangent, but pretty much, yeah, I would travel to Haiti every single summer up until I was about a teenager. By my teenage years, I was kind of getting tired of it because now I have a boyfriend, I have friends, like, you know, I'm part of a clique. So I need to be home. I need to be doing stuff, being productive. So I pretty much tossed travel away when I was in high school. And one of my dreams was to go to Disney World. And I would ask my mom all the time when I was really young to go to Disney World. And my high school class was going to Disney. And my mom was like, you've been asking me forever. If you want to go, you could go. But my friends weren't going. So I did not go, which really proves how I did not value travel at one point. fast forward up until college, now travel's becoming a thing again because people are going on spring break trips and study abroad opportunities were coming up. And unfortunately, during this time was around the Great Recession and the money wasn't there. The budget wasn't there. I had asked my mom, I was like, Mom, I'd love to go to Paris. And she was willing to, I don't even know how she was going to find this money, but she was willing to, you know, help me pay my way. But the backstory is that she was losing our home to foreclosure. So I felt so guilty and so sad that here I would be gallivanting in Paris. Meanwhile, my mom is struggling to literally pay the light bill. So I think that was my full moment. Like I just kind of made an about face and I said to myself, you know what? When I become an adult and I have a job, I'm able to save some money. I want to be able to travel the world. I want to be able to afford travel. And I made a commitment to myself that as soon as I got a job, I would figure it out and I would do it. So I had finished grad school and I had saved for an entire year as I was working as a financial analyst, saved for an entire year and I was able to go to Paris. And I spent a week in Paris. I had a day trip to Brussels and I just fell in love. Mind you, it was a solo trip. It was just me solo. And I was like, I don't care. I spent a year saving for, and I also spent years thinking about travel, but I couldn't because I didn't have a job. Right. So that really spurred me to really open my eyes to be like, there's a formula here. You save money, you travel. It's like, oh, that's so cool. Around that time, I also had a desire to start a blog. I don't know why. I think I wanted to document. Clearly, my brand is my brand is called Thought Card, like the thought card. So I had a lot of thoughts to share, but I wasn't this writer. Like I wasn't a writer at all. I wasn't a creative person. Honestly, I'm more of an analytical person. I'm also a Virgo. I don't know if that makes any sense, but Virgos are usually like analytical, logical. And I just thought I didn't have that creativity in me, but I started the blog reluctantly and I realized that I wanted to talk about travel and personal finance. And I'll make this really short, but my personal finance background comes from my parents. So my mom is an accountant. My dad is also an accountant. And at a really young age, my mom would talk to me about money, like saving money. I remember one of my first thoughts of money was seeing my mom's student loan bill on the counter and I asked her about it. I was like, Mom, there's so many zeros. This is crazy. Oh my gosh. So we always had just really honest conversations. My mom helped me open my first retirement account when I was 15. And we started putting some savings into like CDs. Back in the day, CD rates were actually pretty decent. So I started off with CDs. And then I built up enough income. By the time I graduated high school, I had saved $5,000, which was huge. Like you didn't buy Jordans or Abercrombie and Fitch. Like you actually saved your money. Like it's crazy. It was crazy. So I had enough money and I put it into a mutual fund. My mom helped me open that up. So that is really where travel came, like from my childhood, abandoning it, coming back to it. And then money, having my mom talk to me about money, saving, investing at a really young age. And I realized when I wanted to start a blog, I could be like a regular travel blogger, but why not be the person that talks about how to travel with savings? Like you have to save to travel. Money can help or hinder. And I wanted to really debunk the myth that you can travel with a full-time job. You can travel when you have student loan debt. You can travel when you get married, all the things. I was always the and person. I wanted to be this and. And I think looking back at it, you know, now that, ooh, it's been a long time now, I definitely feel like I found my place. And I do feel like what I share and what I do is really important. It is helping people.
Now, you mentioned that you were in a finance role when you started your blog, which was the first part of your brand. How long did you work in, or even maybe you still do that, but how long did you work in finance if you did end up quitting before you decided to kind of take your business full time?
So fun fact, my business is not full time. It's not full time, but it is definitely the end goal with the bigger goal of just by being financially independent and retiring early. Mm-hmm. But when I graduated college, I graduated with a bachelor's degree. I had wanted to be a doctor, but my mom was like, well, you know, why don't you just get something more tangible than pre-med bio? So I said, okay, fine, I'll do finance. And I wanted to be the doctor that had business savvy skills. I wanted to have my own practice. And I was probably the only person in my whole university that was a pre-med student that was majoring in finance. It was very odd. But wow. Yeah, I graduated in, graduated with a bachelor's in finance. And my mom is in healthcare. She's an accountant in healthcare. And I knew I wanted to be in healthcare. I wanted to be a doctor. So I did a couple of internships to just kind of be in the more admin side, just to see what that was like. And I realized that I really did like healthcare administration. So I decided that while I was studying for the MCATs, I would go for my master's in healthcare administration. I felt like that would be a really, you know, stacking these skills. Not only are you pre-med, you're working on your MCAT, you have your finance degree, and then now you're a healthcare administrator, right? That would be really cool. But I realized while I was studying for my MCAT that there was a blockage there. I just couldn't study for the MCAT. It just wasn't for me. The path just wasn't unveiling itself there. So I decided that I would just focus on healthcare administration, and that is what I do today.
Okay, got it. Now, how much is it difficult? Because you have, and we're going to go through every single one of these, but you've got a lot on your plate. Is it tough to, and that's why I honestly kind of just assumed, like, this podcast is all about side hustles. A lot of the women that I talked to, though, they ended up turning their side hustle into a full-time, you know, business. And so that's why I kind of just figured, because you have so many different, like I said, the podcast, the blogging, like, you've written books, like, so much. And then you also have a full-time job. How the heck do you do it all?
Good question. I think it's a progression, right? And I also think that there are seasons where I prioritize certain types of content that I create versus other types of content. So right now I'm on a podcast break, which means that I'm not working on the podcast, or at least forward facing on the podcast, which gives me the capacity to write more blog posts, to do podcast episodes, be a guest, and things like that. However, when I am writing a book, which usually takes me about 2 to 3 months, I don't have any more words to write after my book gets all the words. So that is the time I'm usually writing the book, and I'm usually working on the podcast where I'm releasing episodes. So I try to really just balance between the content I'm creating and understanding that I can't do it all at once, but I can do a combination. And I think that was a really good example that, you know, I'm going to start actually writing my next book in April. So, okay, no more blog posts after that, just hunkering down and then writing all the words.
Yeah. That's a really interesting and smart, technique that you have. Like, you only work on your podcast, like, whatever it may be, 6 months out of the year versus year round. But it allows you to, like, focus on specific avenues rather than kind of getting, like, scatterbrained and knowing you have to do 7 different things for 7 different businesses that you have. I like that you do that. And now, a quick question though, for, like, the blogging and the podcasting, do you only release posts or episodes in that time, or do you record a ton of episodes, but then you scatter them out throughout the year?
I would say a bit of a hybrid. So, for example, I've been on a podcasting break since January, and I knew that I was going to come back with new episodes in April. So January and February, I was just relaxing, not thinking about the podcast at all. I actually even hired an editor. So I guess that was a little bit productive. But now that we're in March, I actually batching recording. So I actually scripted out all of my episodes, who I wanted to have on. And I usually typically do, like, 2 weeks of recording. So I tell my guests, hey, I have 2 weeks in March. If you want to be on the show, like, this is a good time. And I just record all of the episodes in that 2 week period for the season. And the season could be anywhere from, like, 3 to 4 months. And then I take another break.
Okay.
So I do small batch works, but I just think about it in seasons, and I kind of prep for the next season a month or two ahead of time.
Got it. Got it. Okay, cool. That makes so much sense. I really like that. Just for my own podcast, I'm like, ooh, I need to steal that technique rather than just like constantly like each week recording new episodes of the year. Okay, but let's change topics. Let's actually start talking about all the different businesses that you have. So in 2015, you started your blog called The Thought Card. Can you give us a little bit of background on this blog?
Yeah. So I knew that I wanted to talk about travel, absolutely. But I also knew that everyone else was talking about travel, wasn't talking about the financial aspect of it. And at the time I had $63,000 of student loan debt. And that was like a big elephant in the room. Like, wait, how am I going to do both?
Right.
So I took it upon myself to really blend travel and money together. So you would have a destination post and also 5 tips for paying off your student loan debt early. And it was relevant. For me, it was relevant. But at the time, like 5 years ago, I think a lot of people didn't get it. It was like I was a unicorn. People didn't understand that, yes, you need money to travel, even though they know they need money to travel, but no one was talking about it. And I definitely felt like I was the lone wolf out there talking about travel and money. But over time, people have definitely, they understand it. They understand that, you know, money is a tool that can be used to help you design your life. And I think it's more widely accepted. And that's really how the blog started. And in terms of strategies, my whole goal for the first 3 years was just to write one article a week. My goal was to just publish one new article every Friday. And that's how I knew I was keeping on track and being consistent. And because I had a full-time job, that was the only thing I could do. That was all that I had capacity for. But over those years, I became a more stronger writer, like a more, I would say, very good writer. But again, this wasn't something that I thought that I was, right? It was a muscle that I kept on flexing every day. Well, every day, but for years until I felt like, okay, I was ready to step it up. In the meantime, I did have an idea for a podcast, and I had been listening to podcasts for years. And there was one show, and her name is Whitney Hansen, and I love her show. Her show is the Money Nerds podcast. And I was so inspired by her work. And I was like, I wonder if I could do something like Whitney. And I was nervous. I was nervous about being by myself recording. I was nervous about the tech. I was just nervous about everything, about doing things solo. So I asked a friend to see if he would be interested in podcasting with me. He said yes, but he was dragging his feet. So I was like, okay, clearly you don't want to do this. Yeah. So clearly no. So I just abandoned the idea. It wasn't until April 2018, Spotify had this application where they were looking for a woman of color who had an aspiring podcast. All you had to have was an idea. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, well, why not? Let me just pitch this idea. I did not even pitch my show. I pitched the idea I had with my friend. I'd even pitched the Thought Card podcast, which is crazy. But that opportunity changed my life, because at the end of the application, they asked, what would you want to see change in the podcasting industry? And I said something to the extent of like, I want to see a space for women of color podcasters to be together. Because when I looked at Apple Podcasts, I only saw a handful, and I just didn't think that women of color or Black women were podcasting. So long story short, when Spotify was supposed to announce the winners, they did not. But I was on Twitter harassing Spotify. And also I discovered a hashtag that was about the bootcamp. And there were hundreds, if not thousands, of women of color who were talking about this opportunity. And I was so shocked. I quickly created a Twitter list so I can keep track of everybody. But I realized that this is not a community. Like, I can't talk to them the way I want to talk to them. So let me just create a Facebook group. And that's really how women of color podcasters, a very big portion of my business, that's how it started. By literally a Twitter hashtag that went viral. And I just asked everybody, hey, let's keep in touch. And let's, you know, with this Facebook group.
Wow.
So that's the story. That's the story of how podcasting came into my life.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And And honestly, that was one of the questions that I was going to ask when I started talking about your podcast was like, did you gain, you know, because I saw recently on the Thought Card podcast, you had, or maybe it wasn't even recently, but I saw it on your Instagram, you hit 50,000 downloads, mm-hmm. which is incredible. And I was going to ask, like, was it, did you think that it was mainly like, did you drive a lot of people from your blog to the podcast? Like, was that how you were able to get all those downloads? But that's a really cool, like Twitter was what helped you establish the Women of Color podcasters community. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's literally, I had started the group in May. It wasn't until July we had a meetup in New York City. And then the members were like, okay, Danielle, you're doing a lot of work here, but where's your podcast? And I looked around and I said, that's true. Where is my podcast? And slowly but surely, after that meetup, I was like, I'm going to launch in 2 months. And I launched in September of 2018 for my podcast. So it was literally the community that pushed me to get started. And in terms of like podcast growth, it's so hard because like, unlike a blog, you can see I tweet today and the tweet means, you know, 20 visitors tomorrow. Like you can actually see referrals where in the podcast, you can't see the back end. You could see the downloads. You could see how many people are listening. And there are tools like podcast, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. They have tools for analytics, but it's not as clear cut to see exactly where and what did you do that led to your traffic. But I like to think that my biggest strategy when it comes to growing my podcast has been appearing as a guest on other podcasts. So a lot of podcast listeners love listening to other podcasts. So it's like, it's so easy to transfer from one to another. So at this point, I've been a guest on close to 85 shows, and I'm hoping to hit 100 by the end of this year. And I think that has been really instrumental because new audience listeners for all these shows are finding those shows and they may stumble upon my episode. And then they hear me saying that, hey, listen to my podcast. And they come over and join me. So I have a feeling that that's primarily why, but it's really, really hard to tell.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. This morning I woke up, I went to the gym. And then when I came home around like 7:45, I use Captivate for like my podcasting host. And I randomly had, I think it was like 61 people who downloaded this like before 8 a.m., which to me is a lot. I only started this podcast less than two months ago. So I was like, what the?
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's exciting.
It's so exciting. But I didn't know why did 61 people randomly watch my or start listening to my podcast, you know, and they were all unique too. It was nobody that, you know, was a regular listener. So I wish there was a little bit more background on where are they coming from? Like, what did I do to make all of them come this morning before 8 a.m. But I totally agree with you on that. And so, okay, a quick question that I have. So you started the Women of Color podcasters community before the Thought Card podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was thinking it was the opposite that you started, you know, you started your blog and 3 years later you were able to expand into podcasting. And then kind of like that same year after becoming kind of like an expert in podcasting, you founded this community, but it was the opposite. That's amazing that you started this community before you even had like the knowledge and experience actually producing a podcast yourself.
Yeah, no idea. I had no idea what I was doing for a really long time.
Wasn't that hard? Like, how did you, like, did you feel like imposter syndrome in a way that, you know, I'm starting this community of podcasters, but I don't have one myself? Or did, you know, was that you were just like, whatever, who cares?
Definitely when I first like hit the creation button for creating the Facebook group, I did have that fear. I remember calling my mom and like crying my eyes out and telling her like, I don't know what I'm doing. How can I do this group? But I think what was special about the formation of the community was that we were all aspiring podcasters. So that opportunity, Spotify's opportunity, was looking for aspiring podcasters. So a lot of the people who joined us in the get-go were just like me, trying to figure it out. Maybe they had a couple episodes out already, but it wasn't until later that executives and bigger podcasters like found the group and they started contributing. But I felt okay because a lot of us were just new.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So it's like all, you know, women of color, all in the same shoes, kind of like aspiring to start something with a podcast. Got it. Okay. That's awesome. Now, did you say that this community has now become one of like your bigger revenue streams?
Yeah. It's definitely up there, which I think will help me eventually take the leap.
Awesome. So what, talk to me a little bit more about how you were able to monetize this community. Do you have like a service that you offer, or maybe like a membership, or do you like sell any, I don't know, courses, or like what, you know, how do you monetize this community?
Yeah. So this is 3 years in the making. So as long as we've been on and working together, right, is how long it's taking me to monetize. So it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. But what I did is during the pandemic, so I think around maybe March, the start of the pandemic,
yep,
I had an idea. I was like, you know what? I think that there's a way that I can make income, recurring income, and also better serve my audience. Because a Facebook group, yeah, you can do lives here and there if you want to teach, but how do you keep people accountable? How do you learn? How do you grow together, courses and things like that? And I didn't want to do a one-off course. I wanted it to be like a membership again for that recurring revenue, not just a one-time inflection of cash. So I created a membership, and that was the first real time that I was able to make WC Podcasters into a business. Mm-hmm. And that was very, very exciting. By the end of like the first month, I already had 100 paying members, which was great. But mind you, we have a 4,200 member group. Yeah. So it's only a very small sliver who are actually paying a service. And I've been doing that for the last, 9 months or so, heading on a year in May. And that's been great. And while I've been doing this, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, do I really want to continue with the Facebook group? I think for me, the hard part has been that not only am I running on volunteer hours, but also my admin team is also running on volunteer hours. And after 3 years, you get tired of asking people to do stuff for you for free. It's just tiring. It's not humiliating, but it's embarrassing. I don't know. There's just something that doesn't feel good about it, right? Like, and sadly enough, there are thousands of Facebook admins who were in the same position as me. They desperately needed funding to keep this group open. And for some reason or another, they're just continuing to ask their admin team for free volunteer hours. And I just didn't want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And also I think the membership really helped because it proved a concept. It's like people will pay me for the knowledge I share or the people who I have access to and for the transformation that I'm promising. It's possible. It is possible. And over time I've increased the price. So I said, okay, super low price. Now mid-tier price, now advanced price. If people are still buying. So yeah. I know for a fact that this is truly the income model that fits. I tried Patreon. I tried one of courses. Nothing felt right. Membership feels absolutely right. And what I decided recently is that I'm going to close down the Facebook group. And it's primarily because I want to be able to do WC Podcasters 100% how I know we have the capacity to do if we had funding. If we had funding, we can do so much. We could have speakers, we could have events, we could have trainings and opportunities and not necessarily have to be on Facebook. If I get shut out of Facebook, then I don't know how we're going to keep running, right? Because that's, you just don't have control over it.
Yeah.
So I announced it in the Facebook group recently. And I was very nervous. I was crying. Aww. And I was like, I don't know if they're going to hate me. And they were so sweet about it, everything. And they were very supportive. And I literally haven't heard any objection, like not even one. I'm so surprised. One thing I was very fearful of hasn't even come up. And we're transitioning to move the community from Facebook to a new platform officially April 1st, and we're going to sunset the group. So we're not going to shut it down, but we're going to just no more posting, nothing. So you could still look to see what the old stuff is. And even for me, like, there's so much content. There's 3 years of content that I need to go through and maybe create a course or create freebies or something. There's information in there that could really benefit us all if we had the time. So I'm excited for the next step with that business arm.
Yeah, I feel like Facebook communities are super, super helpful. I'm in a ton of them, honestly, but there are some that I'm in, like there's actually two that I'm in that you actually have to pay like a monthly fee to be in that Facebook community, because like they're giving away so much like content that it takes time for that, the Facebook, like the owner of that, to come up with that stuff and to create it. So like, I get it. And people these days are so willing, I think, to spend money. Like they know the importance, like it sucks to have to spend money on, you know, courses or whatever, a coach or whatever it may be, but it, they're like ROI when you do is just, it blows the cost out of, you know, out of the water. So I think that you kind of like proved yourself by growing this community on Facebook to over 4,000 members over the past few years. Like you've shown that you're credible, that they can trust you, that you are knowledgeable and you have the expertise. And now like starting this membership, I think so many other podcasters in particular are starting memberships as well. So it makes complete sense. I totally get it. I support it. But yeah, I'm excited for you. I hope that you get a lot of members that sign up. That's great that they're all supportive.
Yes, me too. Me too. I'll keep you posted.
Awesome. So you mentioned you recently hired an editor for your podcast. Were you doing all of like the editing, writing, the whole shebang by yourself?
Yeah, I was the only one. I was a lone wolf doing all the things. And, you know, I realized like, wow, my podcast it's the problem with podcasts for me is like, I'm not directly monetized, meaning that I don't have a sponsor paying me. I don't have a membership for my podcast, but my zone of expertise with the podcast is affiliate marketing. Mm-hmm. So my affiliate marketing is really strong. So I said, you know what, and it's not even like it's a one-time thing. It's been consistent for the past year, 2 years. So I'm like, you know what, this is a strong income stream. So I think it's time to outsource. And I'm very excited to be able to outsource that. The one thing that I'm going to still keep in house is that we actually got 3 grants to create a 12-part audio docuseries
I
don't even remember what it's called.
There's too much on your plate.
So much. It's called Millennial Wealth Builders. There we go. It's a 12-part audio docuseries highlighting women of color building wealth. We've gotten 3 grants for that. And that is the only thing that I'm actually creating.
Okay. Because
it's more of a documentary. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what I was doing. So I had to figure it out to make it documentary style. And I feel like I'm doing pretty good. It's flexing my creative muscles in new ways.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds awesome. And that's kudos to you for getting those grants. And honestly, I feel like right now for me as well, I do all like my editing. I literally do everything. But I think that there definitely comes a point where it makes sense to outsource. Like it takes up a lot of your time to have to freaking edit and do all this. So I will get there one day, but that's great that you were able to outsource that. And now you can kind of like focus that time on, you know, your book or your blog or your full-time job or, you know, all the other initiatives that you have going on. And speaking of your book, actually, I do want to talk about that. So you, in 2019, you wrote your first book called Iceland Nature, Nurture, and Adventure. Tell me about that. Like, why Iceland? Is this like a special place for you? Have you just gone there a lot? You know, how did you choose that topic?
Yeah. So Iceland is definitely chef's kiss. It's my favorite destination in the world. From my 22 country experience, a limited experience, but so far I love it so, so much. I've been there 3 times and I wrote a lot about it on the blog and I had an idea for writing a book. I'm sure like a lot of people do. They're like, I want to write a book. And I wanted to write a book, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. But one of my friends, actually, she sent me a opportunity where a small publishing house was looking to pretty much have authors write books about destinations. And the perspective was from a Black woman perspective. And when you think of Iceland, you don't think about Black women perspective at all. So yeah. I said, you know what? Like, I feel like I'm qualified. Like, I don't live in Iceland, but I've been there enough. I have Icelandic friends and I've written for Icelandic publications as well. So I felt like I could give this a shot. So I signed the contract and 2 months later, they wanted to have the book in their hands. So that was like, okay, let's do it.
Wow.
The good thing about that was that they actually gave me an outline. So I didn't have to do the outlining process. It was just literally follow what they said. I would just really caution folks, like if you're going to sign on with a publisher, make sure you read the contract and make sure you don't assume anything. So I assumed that they were going to have an editor to read and proofread. Because I was just writing. I wasn't here for the commas and the grammatical mistakes that I knew I made. And I realized after I submitted the draft that they weren't going to do that. So that became like a nightmare trying to find an editor, which I've used the same editor since then, which is great. So I've learned a lot. I learned a lot through that process. And I feel like although that process was tricky, it really gave me the confidence to be like, I did it once. Now let's see if I can do it again. And it's just rinse and repeat at this point.
Yeah, I went to Iceland, I don't know when, like 2017 or 18, and I loved it. And it's just, it honestly feels like you're on Mars or something. Like, it's just insane how beautiful it is. Like the waterfalls, just everything. It's incredible. But 2 months to write a book sounds very short, like very quick and stressful.
Yeah. So I think there's definitely a learning curve when it comes to writing books. And it wasn't until I worked with my editor for the first time that I realized that there was a process. And she did a very thorough job at telling me, no, this is not a blog. This is a book. And that's why I love hiring editors, because I feel like if you're new to the process, you may not know what to do. And you could hire a writing coach or you could hire an editor who helps you to wordsmith the final product. So the writing part was actually easy because I just pretty much wrote like a blogger. But the real work was when I was working with the editor who helped me to say, okay, like for example, like your paragraph structures and this and that. And sticking with the same editor over the last 2 years has been really helpful because she knows my writing style. And it's like, I pretty much tell her, hey, I wrote this new book, and she's actually excited. Like she loves talking about money and travel. So I get someone who's excited about my work, who loves personal finance and travel, but also someone who has the eye of an editor who could help me to just clean up my work and really try to produce the best book possible.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah. I'm definitely like, I don't know. I guess in school, I was always like good at English, but writing is hard. It is not easy. You have to be like creative. I don't know. It's just like, it's not my strong suit. So that's impressive. And then even after that first book, you know, you had the outline, you had the editor, which definitely helped. You then went on to write more books and have a blog and have a podcast, which is mind-boggling, again, how you can juggle this all. Do you have plans in the future, like to continue writing books? Like, do you have a passion now for writing the books, or is it just a really good way to, you know, bring in extra income? So that's why you like to do it. Like what, you know, what's your plan with that?
Yeah. I think since I've written my first book, it's kind of like travel. Like I written my first book, I can't undo what I did. I can't unsee what I saw. Right. So
yeah,
there's a couple of reasons why I love writing books is because I get to walk my reader through a transformation without distractions, but no distractions, because there's no Google who is like, has ad, there's no ads on my website. There's a lot of distractions when you're online on the web. And also when you're online on the web, you have to write for search engine optimization for the algorithms. I don't have to write for the algorithms in my book. And I could walk my audience through the entire transformation. So instead of telling you 10 tips, I can tell you 10 tips and how to start, how to finish, what to do, all for less than 10 bucks. Sign me up. Like, it's just so, so, so powerful. And I also think it's a great way for people to be introduced to me and my thoughts and my structure and my framework. And when people ask me the same questions, like, oh, how do you save money for travel? Well, here you go. There is a complete guide from A to Z that you can purchase if you want. So that does really help. And recently I was just thinking back in terms of like my college career, and funny enough, James Patterson offered me a scholarship. So I was funded by James Patterson for 4 years throughout my college career.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, what, the top two highest earning authors in the world, or at least in the country. And I'm like, whoa, oh my God, why didn't I take English classes? Why didn't I focus? Why did I minor in communications, you know? But it's just funny how you just kind of, you know, years later, you start putting pieces together and you're like, wow, I wonder if it's been there all along, but I didn't know.
Full circle.
Yeah,
it exactly. comes first, full circle.
Exactly.
That's really cool that, so he funded you. Like, what does that even mean? Like, you got a scholarship like through, I don't know, him somehow, like for finance or communications or what?
Yeah. So I believe that it was an award like for minorities who were excellence in education, and they were doing really good in school. So I believe that was the scholarship, but the college I went to is Manhattan College, and that's his alma mater.
Oh.
So had it established a fund there. And I believe, don't quote me because I may get it wrong, but I believe that was the funding that I got for my scholarship for the 4 years. And I was like, oh, great, I got a scholarship. But now I'm like, oh my gosh, I got a scholarship from James Patterson. That's really exciting.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. That's awesome. Alrighty, so just a couple more questions for you. One of them is, you know, we've kind of touched on this. You juggle, I guess, a lot of different businesses. How do you handle a full-time job and then all of these side hustles? Like, how do you handle the stress, the overwhelm? How do you remain focused? Do you have like any like go-tos to kind of deal with the emotions that could come out of all of that?
Yeah, there's a lot of time management that goes on when it comes to running a business, and especially a creative business, because you can do a lot, but sometimes when you're creative, there's only so much you can do in a day. Like today, I literally wrote for two clients. I spoke at a conference and I have one more article to do. And I'm like, I just have no more creativity in me to do it. I have nothing. I'm doing a podcast interview right now, right? So there's no more creativity in me. But when it comes to managing everything, I think what has been really instrumental is carving time for my family and my husband. So what I do first and foremost is I match when he's away from work, like when he's home, I have those days where it's no meeting days. So is it Tuesday? No, it's Monday and Wednesday. Monday and Wednesday, he's home. So those are no meeting days, because that is actually the most time consuming. It's like we're in the middle of a fun conversation. I'm like, gotta go, babe. I gotta go do this interview. So yeah. I really try my best to have no conversations, no interviews, nothing meeting related on those days. And I can still do work, but I know that after 5 o'clock, then I can spend time. We have dinner and all of that. So really prioritizing like the people in my life has been really helpful. And I feel like I put more boundaries on not only myself, my business, and my clients first and foremost. And then also comes down to days. Like I also think about, how can I put days in a way that it's like, if I'm going to be working on my client stuff, I work on my client stuff the same day every single week. So I usually work on client work on Wednesdays and Thursdays, right? So I have days of the week where I work on particular parts of my business, and it just is like routine. And that really, really helps. But as a freelancer, because I do have freelance clients that I work with, some of my freelance clients, they kind of pop up with like assignments randomly. So that is a situation where you have to decide, are you going to wake up early to get this done, or are you going to stay late? And this also comes down to your creative zones of genius. Like, when are you most creative? For me, I wake up in the morning and I am the most creative in the morning. So if I'm going to wake up and work on client, I have to like wake up and work on a client work, I rather do that than wait until after 5 p.m. when I've already took all the time. I work for someone else and I have to now work for another project, right? So
yep.
I rather just work on it first thing. So just like today, I had a really, really large client load and I woke up at 5:30 and I was done with the article right before 9. And I started my 9 to 5. And it's nice that I also work from home now since the pandemic. That also helps because my commute was 2 hours door to door when I was commuting. So that was so much. So I definitely have more time, but like we said, like when you are working from home, you can just literally go from project to project, have no break, have no time with your family and all of that. So those are some of the ways that I've been helping to like really manage my time.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's like very important to work very hard. You know, if you want your side hustle to grow, of course you have to put in a lot of work, but you have to also like make boundaries. Cause I swear with this like podcast and I've got like another side hustle that I'm starting in addition to my full-time job, I feel like every single night, all I'm doing, like I literally wake up at 7 a.m. I start, you know, immediately working and then I'm working all day. And then at night I'm working on my side hustles or the podcast. And it's, you kind of start to like neglect like your husband, your kids, your pets, whoever it may be. And I just think it's important to like step back and say, you know what, like, yes, of course I could work on the side hustle, but it's important for me to spend the night relaxing, you know, like spend time with your family or your friends or just spend alone time, but it doesn't need to consume you. It's definitely important to take breaks and let your mind just like relax and think of something else. And that way, you know, it will then boost your creativity the next morning. So I agree with that. Okay. Two more questions. One is, what is some advice that you would give to other females out there that they really want to start a side hustle, but they don't know where to begin or they're scared? Any advice that you'd give for them?
Yeah, I would say that I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to make the thing that we have in our minds the thing that has to make us money. And I think from my experience is that I pretty much stumbled into it. And I know that's not the best answer, but it's what I've realized is that sometimes the things that you stumble into that you start as a passion project can be the thing that you become so prolific at that opens you up to make money. So me 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I didn't even know what a side hustle was. I had no idea what a side hustle was. But if you want to, let's say, start a podcast and you're looking for sponsors, for example, then why not start with reading ads for things that you're an affiliate for? And then once you're able to do that successfully, then you go to the brand and say, hey, I did an ad for you. You like it? And see if it works that way. Versus I think a lot of times we're trying to force things to happen when sometimes I do think if you work on things organically, intentionally, but organically, it could lead to bigger things. Another example could be that, for example, let's say you're a blogger and the easiest way for you to make money as a blogger is to get freelance clients, actually. Like that's actually certified money. So you're going to actually have income because there's someone who's paying you at the end of the day. So you can still write a couple of articles on your blog as a quote unquote portfolio and use that portfolio to help spiral you into a freelance writing gig. And then one more thing I wanted to say about the freelance writing gig. If you are interested in freelance writing, what I like to do is I see a client that I potentially want to work with. I try my best to develop a relationship with them. So even if it's like a Twitter, start appearing in their circle so that they have a more like affinity to you than just kind of like a cold pitch if possible. But when you're pitching freelance clients, really think about the angle. Like, what are you going to help them solve? So all my clients I've been able to pick up, it's really because I said to them, hey, listen, I see that you're missing XYZ on your site, or maybe you need a blog and you don't have one and it's going to help you with search engine optimization. So think about being the solution. If you're looking to provide a service to somebody else, be the solution to the problem that they're going to solve, and also make sure that you're developing relationships with people so that it feels more natural.
That's awesome advice. Okay. Last question. How can our listeners find out more about you, read your blog, buy your books, you know, follow along on your journey?
That was the easiest question. Thank you. Easiest question. Yes. Well, let's definitely stay in touch. You can head over to my podcast, The Thought Card Podcast. It's an affordable travel and personal finance podcast. And we have actually a couple of episodes that are focused towards authors, content creators, freelance writers, because obviously that's something that I'm really passionate about. So there is a playlist on my website, podcast.thoughtcard.com, all for content creators. So that could be a good place to binge. And for my books, I have 5 of them. You could head over to danielledesire.com and you'll be able to check out my books. There's 5 of them, which is crazy. Very, very crazy. And then last but not least is my blog, thoughtcard.com. And those are more like long form blog posts. So if you want to read articles, I do usually embed some podcast episodes in them. That's really fun. That's thoughtcard.com. And I'm really active on Twitter and Instagram. So I'm at the Thought Card on Twitter and at the Danielle Desire on Instagram. So let me know what you loved about this episode. Love to connect with you and chat some more.
Awesome. Thank you so, so much. It was great chatting with you today. I learned a lot. I hope our listeners learned a lot. And I'm excited to see where your business goes.
Likewise. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review so other lady hustlers can find the show. Until next time, keep going.